Welcome to the Inside the Game podcast by Scores for Sport Management. My name is Garrett Kersentila, and today I look forward to speaking with Dominik Theodoru, who is the athletic trainer for Brose Bamberg in the German BBL. Dominik and I will talk about his journey to where he is now, but we will also go into the aspects of his work and, you know, what goes into that on a daily basis. Really looking forward to that aspect of the game and everything that comes with it for professional athletes and pro teams. And I hope that you will enjoy my chat with Dominik Theodoru. All right. I'm happy to welcome our guest for today, Dominik Theodoru, athletic trainer for Brose Bamberg. Hello, Dominik. How are you today?
Hey, Garrett. Nice to be here. I'm really excited. Thanks a lot for the invitation. I'm great.
Well, great to have you with us. Exciting story to tell. It's interesting. A lot of people in the German basketball world know who you are. Some maybe don't. Can you give them a short introduction, give them a little background about who you are, what you have done, and what you're doing right now?
Of course, I'll try to keep it short. I'm the performance coach from Brose Bamberg. I actually came over to Bamberg this year in July. Before that, I started to work as a performance coach and team manager in the year 14-15 for BG Göttingen. That was actually right after I finished my studies because I studied, I wanted to become a teacher, and I finished my master's, and my topics or my subjects were physical education and English. And I was also, I always played basketball up until the age of 28. That's when I had like a back injury, and from there everything went downhill. But that was exactly the year where I sort of got in touch with, I have to say, the former coach of BG Göttingen, Johan Royakas, because he would always come to our games, because I played at ASC Göttingen. Back then they were playing in the Regionalliga, they still are. And he had some youth players of his team on that team. And whenever he had like a day off on the weekend, he would join us on an away game. And back then I was already a little bit into training, not just a little bit, I think quite a lot. And I did something with our Regionalliga team. And that's where we actually made a connection. I started talking with him or to him on their away trips on the bus. And when he found out that I cannot play basketball anymore, he asked me if I would like to work as a trainer for the BBL team. So that was the upcoming year, the first year for BG Göttingen in the BBL. Mm-hmm. And I then did that in the first year, but next to my studies. So I actually went to the practice gym, and we had like one or two weight sessions per week. But I would also go to every home and away game to do the warm-ups and things like that. I would be able to give one-to-one workouts if a player wanted that. Back then, Khalid El Amin, for some reason, I established a relationship to him. So he would always ask me before the game if we can get a quick lift, and he just liked that because he felt better on the next day. Mm-hmm. And yeah, then I finished my studies, but you know, teacher is something as of right now, I don't see myself being a teacher. Maybe that still changes, I don't know, but right now I just love what I do. And I've been worked for 5 years for BG, as a performance coach and team manager. So I did two things at once with Johan, of course, together. And then this summer, yeah, everything went really quick. I arrived in Bamberg. Okay. So that's where I'm right now.
So from an injury or a situation where you personally can't play at the level where you would like to play anymore, you went to a part-time job through something that you had a passion for, and then Johan saw that in you. And then you go from that to a full-time job, and you pair athletic trainer and team manager. Yes.
I have to say, I had no clue what was coming at me with the team manager thing. I really had no idea. To be honest, it would always be let's say, quite a handful.
Oh, I bet.
But I found ways to manage it, and I also always were able to do what I love, work with the players in the weight room before practices and so on.
Well, team management, I would assume, has, you know, a lot of time that you spend with players also, and that gives you an opportunity to connect. But your passion wasn't as much in the team management as it was in the athletic training. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Team management, I always considered it as something on the side, which is obviously also important, because we always wanted that the players feel happy. So we always try to do everything for them if they had any requests or questions or something like that. But, you know, through time, you just figure things out. And that's what I did, I would say. And then at some point, yeah, the team manager was, I always considered it as a side job.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always try to fix everything up front so that I can be there for the guys when we lift, when they have like some minor injuries or some, you know, some nagging things they want to get rid of. That's how it was.
Right. So, and I mean, you guys had built a really good program with a good group of guys in Göttingen that you had developed over the years with the overall staff there. And then this summer, the opportunity with Bamberg came to basically work with the complete focus on the athletic training side. How did that come about, or what did that trigger for you when that opportunity came up?
To be honest, I always told myself while I was in Göttingen, because, you know, it has been four, 5 years. And I always told myself, if there is ever a chance that I might go to a team that is maybe a little bit bigger than BG, and if I, let's say, I would be able to be only the performance coach in that team, that I have to do it. Because otherwise, you know, I actually wanted to become a teacher. And then after, I just cut that, went into the team manager, performance coach kind of thing. And when that opportunity came this summer, it was a no-brainer for me, because I was also thinking, should I do it? Should I maybe not do it? But then for sure, let's say I decided to stay in Göttingen, I'm sure 2 years after that decision, I would have told myself, oh my God, you're so stupid. Why did you at least try?
Yeah, it's probably the perfect example of, you know, all these things kind of lining up over the years and you being able to make that process. A lot of people ask, how do you get into sports? How do you get into these jobs? And a lot of times it's hard work. It's passion, yeah. But it's also a little bit of luck and, you know, the stars aligning and being ready for what's ahead of you. So I think this is a great example, and you guys work really hard for all of this.
Yeah, I'm convinced that if you work hard, at some point it's going to pay off. It maybe sounds really easy, but I just did that. I just tried to do everything I could. And I always like to say that, that you, like, especially in the world of professional basketball, I always like to say you cannot be too big for the small things. And that's basically what I did in team management. You know, I just did whatever task was out there. If I had to go to an apartment because a player locked himself out at, I don't know, at 11 p.m. I would just do that because I knew it's part of my job. Yeah. And we always try to be as professional as possible. And this is, I would never say, no, it's 11 p.m. Sorry, I'm not working anymore. This is something I think this is a way you cannot work in this world of professional basketball.
Right. I agree. And it makes a ton of sense. And it's probably why you are where you are now, being ready for it and understanding the moment, you know?
Yeah. I also have to say, of course, if it wasn't for Johan, I wouldn't be here. That is something I absolutely understand. Of course, we're a good team, and he probably wouldn't ask me if I You know, if I completely underachieved in the 5 years we worked together, I understand that as well. But I think if it wasn't for him, then I also wouldn't be in Bamberg.
You were ready for the occasion. So that I think in the end, that's what counts and what makes successful teams.
Front
office, yeah, exactly. Coaching staff and basketball wise. And, you know, with that, we can transition to my second question. I mean, you've been a player before.
Yeah.
You already talked about, you know, the possibility of being a teacher initially. Having played and having been around the game, what is it that actually drove you to the performance side, to the athletic training side, and in working with athletes? What is it that made that part of it so interesting for you?
I'm absolutely sure that the passion I share for the topic of training comes from my own injury history. This is something I hear a lot lately, that coaches decided to become a coach because they were injured before, especially in terms of athletic training, strength and conditioning, performance coaching, something like that. And I think that's absolutely true with me as well. So with 20 years, I started having like a little back pain, but that went away relatively quick. But 25 years, it was actually really bad. I think I had 3 bulging discs. I had constant pain. And that was the time where I was like, okay, good. You got to change something, because, you know, I started working out in the weight room when I was 16 or something. Of course, a little bit like everybody tends to start with that for the looks, of course. but then with 25, I was like, okay, good. The stuff you do in the weight room that don't really transition to the court. So it doesn't lead to the fact that I can still play basketball. And that was actually the reason why I really started digging into the topic of training. I don't know. I went to, different like licenses. I went to seminars. I bought books. I bought online accesses. You name it. I just did everything. And I started to realize that this is just something I can do every day without getting bored. And from the time where I actually started digging into that with 25 years, I just improved my own condition immensely. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, all of a sudden, I was able to play basketball again. I could do everything, no matter how long I practiced, how often I went to the weight room. I just felt awesome, absolutely awesome. And I really dedicate that to the switch and how I looked at training in the weight room. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then there was this one particular situation when Johan, actually, that was the time where we sort of met. He asked me if I could join him for like a summer tryout, because he wanted to look at young youth players. Mm-hmm. And he just needed some bodies.
Right.
And whenever I still know it, whenever I received that text, I was like, I was so delighted. I was like, damn, he's asking me that I can train with him and I can do him a favor. Yes, sure, I do it. So I went there, and that was exactly the time where I felt awesome, where I felt really healthy. So the training was on a Monday and on a Wednesday. Monday, I went there. Like he always likes to say, I left it all out there. I had so much fun. And on the second day, I went there again on a Wednesday, and I still have it in front of me. I was sprinting. Of course, the intensity was way higher than what I was used to from our Regionalliga practices. Mm-hmm. And I was sprinting the court, and there, that's where I felt it. It was like clack, 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 and I was done. I really went back to where I was with the age of 25, but it was way worse. So now I had like a little bit of radiating pain in my leg and the back pain. Whenever I woke up in the morning, it would take me an hour to get going because I couldn't crawl out of bed. It was horrible. I would, for myself, I would say I'm a pretty happy person. Back then, people came to me and were like, hey, Dom, what's going on? You don't laugh anymore. You're usually always in a good mood. Yeah, and that was the time, the next 3 years until I was 30 or something, I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out my back situation. I went everywhere, physical therapy, osteopath, chiropractor, golfing, you name it. I did everything, stretching here, stretching this. And this was the reason why I kept digging deeper. I was like, man, there must be a solution for me. It cannot be possible. I'm not even 30 and I cannot move anymore. That's ridiculous. And at some point, I found it. I found the solution. But until I found it, it took just quite a long time. Yeah, but that was the time where I really educated myself even more. But that only came out of, let's say, just interest. Of course, I wanted to improve my situation. But in order to do that, I was just willing to absorb everything and try everything because I wasn't ready to accept it. And this is exactly when Johan asked me, "Hey, do you want to do that for the professional team?" And this is, I think, the reason why I'm so in love with the topic of training. I remember, how should I put that? I'm basically almost obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. When I go, for example, to the gym and look at other people, I'm not going in the gym anymore because I'm always in our practice gym. But back then, if we play somebody, I always look what other coaches are doing. I always look what other players are doing. It's almost like a little bit of fear of missing out. Are they doing something that I maybe miss? And I think there's just so much passion in there, and I just want to help players. That they are hopefully able to avoid these situations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that this is basically my drive.
I think that's a great drive, developing that passion out of your own necessity and then having an opportunity that knocks on your door, working with Bundesliga players and digging even deeper. And I can totally understand, you know, how the passion even grows with that. When you go into your daily work or year-round planning with athletes, how do you go about setting goals with and for your athletes that you work with? How do you approach that part?
That's a really interesting question. If I may, I would like, first of all, I would like to comment on how do you say that, on my own demands, so what I demand from myself. This is because I think it's also very important. So I always try, of course, to be invested in the athlete's outcome. I think this is my biggest goal. I want them to get better. And in order for me to do that, I obviously show interest. Yeah, I show interest in them. I want to create awareness for whatever topic. That's maybe something we can talk later also a little bit about. In order to do that, I always try to be as authentic as possible. And with being authentic, I think I want the players to know that I'm just absolutely passionate about that. I think that's really important. And I want athletes, I would like to give them zones where they can operate in. So that's a little bit the autonomy that maybe comes also later, because I'm sure you're going to ask me about in-season training. and what I want from players, I'm trying to create compliance. And I think you can only create compliance when you show them that you really care. And therefore, I'm also a big believer that athletes buy in when you are energetic, when you are really when you're organized, when they know that you plan everything, that when they come in, everything is set up. And also excitement is, I think, something that I think athletes like a lot. So this is, let's say, this is what I demand from myself. Yeah, when I work with players. And I personally think it's very important. When we now look at when we want to talk about goals regarding to the players, obviously the number one thing every year, and I think that's never going to change, I just want them to, stay healthy, of course, because if they are not healthy, then they cannot perform, they cannot practice, they cannot showcase themselves during practices. That is obviously stands above everything. That's what I try with every player, of course. And the goals we set, I always also have to look at injury history, because these days we know if you sustain an injury before, let's say it's a muscular related injury, there's a very good chance that this happens again if you don't assign work to these specific areas. Yeah, I had that also before with players in Göttingen. Touch wood, so far we don't have that in Bamberg. But yesterday, I think I saw in the highlights, oh, I was really sad when I saw Peyton Siva went down again with a hamstring injury. And I think that's something he has been dealing with before. So just to give you, I'm not sure if it's the same side, I'm just guessing here. But in the end, you can say a previous injury is the biggest indicator for a future injury. And that's why I need to know, of course, and I will do everything I can that if I have a player who had a muscular injury in last year, 2 years before, 3 years before, that we always work on that, because that is something with work, with training, we can actually minimize the chances that will happen again. This year, I also have two guys who had a muscular related injury last year, and we are working daily on that. So far, so good. But training, I also have to say, is never a vaccine against that these problems happen again. I think it's very important that I, like in terms of goals for players, I want to educate them. I want, if they're not educated already, if, you know, some players are obviously very interested in the weight room and things they can do there. So for some players, I don't have to do a lot, of course, anymore, but some players, they probably need it and they are also still interested. The reason why I want to educate them is that I actually want them to be able to make good decisions in the weight room by themselves. So let's say I'm not there. Yeah, they came in a little earlier. They want to do something, and I just want them to choose good things for themselves. So actually, I just want to make myself obsolete. So if I'm not there, I know they will figure things out. That is something I think is very important, especially for the players, because everything we do is not just short term. It's obviously all these things you can do on the side, in the weight room, before practices, after practices. These are things that hopefully will extend the career. And that's in the interest of the player, of course. And then if, you know, different goals, for example, I do my screening before the preseason starts. And if I see something there, yeah, something that I think needs to improve, then I obviously try to work with it on with that particular player. Yeah, if it's, I don't know, if it's an asymmetry somewhere right to left, or if it's, you know, if it's a small asymmetry, of course, but if it's something that stands out, yeah, I would like to address it with that player. And I also obviously explain my reasons for it.
Yeah, I mean, you already mentioned a couple of things here, you know, that we would get into in the future, but I think they're also connected to the part of goal setting, you know, and how you include the player into that. You mentioned buy-in, getting the buy-in from the athlete, but mm-hmm. also the different dynamics of in and off-season training. What are your best ways to first of all, get buy-in? By being clear on one hand what you expect and what you bring in. You already mentioned that, but how do you get the players to buy in within their different circumstances? Because obviously all of those are individual, and you cannot, you know, if you want to get the best results, I believe you have to take an individual approach and can't exactly have a better approach for a team or for all these athletes. How do you tackle that on a 12-month basis with everything that goes into that?
So individualization is, of course, a big, big topic. What I mentioned before, I mentioned autonomy already. And I also said that I like to give players ranges where they can work in.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, when no matter what we do in the weight room, I'm not the type of guy who is like, okay, guys, come in, everybody, trap our deadlift today. 3-4 reps, 85% of your one rep max. Here we go. Everybody does the same. That just doesn't work. Yeah. And I like to give choices in the weight room because I think your body doesn't really know if you do a trap bar deadlift, if you do a barbell deadlift, if you do, I don't know, a Zercher kind of squat, or if you do a front squat, or the body just doesn't know. I just need to find a solution that works best for everybody. Yeah. And I think from that, yeah, from like allowing athletes to choose, gives them more intrinsic motivation, I think. So, and this also obviously leads to buy-in. Yeah. I talked with one of our players 2 weeks ago, and I just asked him what he thinks about that. And he said, "Dom, I've never seen it like this. I really like it because I can choose what to do and I can choose what works best for me." In the end, you have to say, it is not, it's not like everybody does his own thing here. That's obviously also what it's not. Yeah. It's like autonomy within a structure, of course. So it's not that the players come in and I'm like, okay, guys, here we go. Start, you do what you want. That's obviously not what it is. There is a structure behind everything. But I also have to say that within the last years, it kind of works. Yeah. I always see players doing things. You know, you have players that don't like the weight room that much. So they sometimes try to sneak out a little bit. But since it's pretty free in terms of choice, I see them doing things. Also, the players who are not maybe that married to the weight room, like I am, for example.
Well, so you create the environment of excitement and, you know, opportunities that you enjoy. It makes it easier to start enjoying something or get involved. And it probably also adds to the room where you can't really be the one that's not doing something if others are. So.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly a very good point. It's like self-discovery a little bit. Yeah. You could say it like this as well. But I think I missed the other part of your questions.
Well, for me, working with athletes, you know, from the business side more, the big topic is in-season, off-season training, you know, working on deficiencies, working on weaknesses that you have, and also strengthening your strength. Mm-hmm. And when do you do what part of this, and when do you do it? When can you accomplish the best results? And then pairing that with team needs, because obviously, again, we all understand that there is a difference in you know what you can do at what time of the year and during the season, and obviously all year round. But for the team purposes, most importantly, you have to be healthy and available during the season. And the topics that you have there going into the athletic training and performance part, I find the discussions about in and off season training and what you can accomplish at what time super fascinating, and the different views on that. Just love to hear your perspective on it.
Yeah, what you just said is really important. Availability is the biggest ability, of course, also for players, especially in season. But let me talk a little bit about off-season training. I think off-season training is really important. Some players, I mean, at least from what I experienced myself, some players, they come in and they, when I ask them, okay, what is your training load? What did you do? What did you do in the last 2 months? Sometimes I really get me one, not a lot. Just chilling, just resting. And then they come in and then all of a sudden they need to practice 3 times a day, 5 days in a row. And that obviously puts them in a position where an injury is almost around the corner, because they are just like the difference from what they have done in the last 2 months to what they are then forced to do all of a sudden is just too big. Yeah, I think that's also common sense. Then they most of the time get injured. So that's why I always, off-season training needs to happen. Ideally 6 weeks, even more, 12, 8 weeks, if that's possible, yes, sure. But sometimes it's obviously not possible because just before the start of the season, the player gets signed. And then, yeah, if he didn't do anything for the last months, that's something I cannot change anymore, which is actually really sad. Yeah. So off-season training, the biggest thing for off-season training, you just want to create capacity. Yeah. Because if you are used to certain stimulus over a longer period of time, yeah, then there is a very good chance that when the season is around the corner, when the preseason is about to start, that you can deal with that stress just a little better because you have been used to inputs for the last weeks. Yeah, in terms of, we all know that strength training or resistance training makes us more durable. Yeah, it sort of protects us a little, not just a little more, yeah, instead of obviously not doing anything. And I always like to say basketball on this level, or in general basketball, it's really tough to simulate in the weight room. I think you cannot do it, yeah, and you also cannot simulate the conditioning parts of basketball. But what you can do is you can put yourself in a better position through a program that aims at being good at the foundation, yeah, that is making you stronger and that gives you that buffer zone you need when the season starts. And still, I come back to this. This is not a vaccine, yeah, but it just makes you less vulnerable, yeah. And that is actually, and it is actually pretty easy. It doesn't have to be super complex. It just needs to aim. You just need to be progressively a little better before the preseason starts. And I could go into the nitty gritty now, but I think that's nothing that we don't have to do that now. But a good off season needs to set the tone for what's coming in the preseason. And if you have a good off season, and this is right away the link to in-season training, let's say if you're used to certain lifts, if you just build capacity, then it helps you also executing in-season training way better. You know what I mean with that?
Yes,
let's say, I don't know, there's one exercise out there which, for example, helps to reduce the amount or the incidence of hamstring injuries. That's the Nordic hamstring curl. Yeah, it's a super aggressive exercise. But if you, let's say, if you're used to that in your off season, yeah, you can keep on doing it in the in season. Yeah, but let's say if now an athlete comes in, hasn't done anything, and he last year he told me, I had a hamstring issue going on, then it's tough for me. Then it's tough if I put him then on the Nordic hamstring curl. He might be very sore on the next day. And if he's very sore on the next day and still has to do basketball practice, this is something that doesn't go well. Yeah, it's, of course, I have to find a different solution then. But that's what I mean. If you have a good off season, yeah, you can also execute your in-season training way better.
But you would also focus or stress fundamentals and setting a strong and good base first in the off season to then be able to continue throughout the season. You see a lot of people doing fancy stuff these days, but you would be more on the side of, if I understand you correctly, building a strong base, doing the little things right. And
yeah, exactly. Exactly. What you see on social media sometimes, that is sometimes I get angry, not really angry, but I'm like, oh my God, why? There are easier solutions. And what I also always say is that good resistance training in the off season, that doesn't require any talent. Everybody can do that. But I would obviously start with the fundamentals. I would try to be very good at the fundamentals because that is what we know, what simply works. If you go regular 4 times, five, maybe even 5 days a week in the off season, have a good strength training, you know, not just strength training. Of course, in the off season, you have also time to, first of all, you need to work on weaknesses. Yeah. That you have more time in the off season to address these things. Yeah. You obviously also, you want to run faster, sprint faster. That's something you can cover in the off season. Yeah. Basketball players want to jump higher, of course. Yeah, that's something you can address in the off season. You can also address it in the in season, but it always depends on what you're used to. Yeah. And in the off season in general, you can say you can push the ceiling a little more. That means you can really go, you can aggressively, I don't like the word, but you could be a little bit more aggressive towards improving your numbers in the weight room. Yeah. In the in season, that's a little different. That's a little different in my mind because, you know, the numbers in the weight room, they don't transfer to the court.
The court and playing time. Yeah. I mean, that's where the head coach is going to come in and would say, what did you do yesterday? He can't run. He can't do this. He can't do that. And you want to minimize that.
Exactly. I always keep saying in the off season, you can be a little bit sore on the next day. That's fine. That's absolutely because then, okay, adaptation is going to happen. Then you did something you maybe not as you weren't as prepared for. That's why you're sore on the next day. But in the off season, that's okay. You don't have to basketball practice. You don't have to compete with your teammates on the next day. Yeah, that's fine. But in the in season, that changes a little bit because I always keep saying the weight room in the in season should give players more than it takes away from them. So they should, after a weight training session in the in season, they should feel better, not worse. And I'm not the kind of coach who on the next day, let's say everybody comes in, oh man, Norm, yesterday we did like 5 sets of 8 lunges or whatever. My hamstrings are on fire. Then there are guys out there who are like, yeah, man, I really made them sore. That was a good practice session. But that, in my mind, is just absolutely dumb because it doesn't help. It doesn't help the athletes to perform on the court. It basically robs them from their skill, I would say. Yeah. And at the end of the day, nobody cares. I mean, I wouldn't say nobody cares, but what they do on the court is way more important than what they do in the weight room. Yeah. So the weight room should be a contributor. It should contribute, put it like this. It should not tax the athlete.
Yeah, I mean, basketball skill comes first. And then we obviously all see that regardless of level, athletic ability is becoming more and more important. And I think that's where a lot of players struggle with where do you put your emphasis at what point, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
When do you work on which part? And I think that's where building a good program and you're doing that with the athlete and for the athlete is super helpful and important. And if you do that right, I think, again, we can go back to the word buy-in. That's where you can get it.
And the other thing is, I always like to say that as well, the main goal in season that stands above everything, everybody wants to win games.
Right. Yeah?
And we know that there's a better chance to win games if you have your complete, if our coach can choose from the complete squad, yeah, from the complete team. And we obviously don't want players sitting out because of an injury. What you said before, the biggest ability is availability. And that's, if you ask me for my biggest task, I think that's helping players in staying healthy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. With whatever that is, if you have a guy who was injured before, muscular related 1 year ago, okay, then I really have to pay attention to that area. He needs to do things over and over and over again to hopefully protect that area. Yeah. I think that stands above everything. And with that, there's also my biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. My biggest challenge is that to make players aware that if they want to see results, yeah, they have to do things over and over and over and over again to hopefully elicit a positive response from their body. So basically that that brings me to my favorite quote, or this, I just found that, I think half a year ago or something like that. If you aren't consistent, you can't say it didn't work. So I need to make sure that they understand that durability, yeah, only happens when they invest. And let's say you have a guy who has a calf injury, calf strain. For the time he's out, he does everything to come back on the court. Yeah. But what I've seen a lot already, by the time he's back on the court, he just drops everything he did before in order to make it back to the court. And this is where I come in. I always like to say to my guys, I'm this annoying fly, yeah, that always comes back to your nose, reminding you that you cannot stop just because it helped you from an injury coming back to the court. Now you need to stay on it, stay on top of it, keep doing it. Because what I said before is like the with the previous injury and future injury.
Right.
This is something I really try hard to ingrain in our players. and also the other thing is treatment is great. Yeah, if players get treatment, that's absolutely fine. But just don't think that treatment makes you more robust. Yeah. And if you want to change something with your body or in your body, you need to do something actively. So you need to train, basically. Long story short.
This is almost like a perfect transition to one of my other stories, questions, where I wanted to kind of see what you think of that. Obviously, it's a difficult topic because head coaches or coaching staffs makes a decision about playing time and every player wants to get on the floor. But we all know that there is always a good cop, bad cop routine. There are always different roles. There is the head coach makes the decisions in the end. Players communicate with assistant coaches. The athletic trainer plays a role and communicates with players. You already mentioned being a team manager and connecting with players that way. There is this moment for a player where he feels like I'm doing everything and I'm still not getting the playing time. And that's what I want. I want to play. I'm an athlete. And I do know that that plays into the consistency of working out, training as well. Do you have any strategies, any things you do when players hit that wall, when they are at the point where, what do I need to do? What can I do? And how do you keep them motivated when some of the results that they would like to have are not coming their way?
Yeah, that's a tough topic. Yeah. The first thing I always tell myself, especially, you know, if we all know that when you lose, you know, when you lose bad, the head coach can also be, yeah, might the atmosphere might not be as good as it is, right, when you win. Yeah. So what I tell myself all the time, I just want to be always completely opposite. I want to be the positive guy, the most positive guy possible. When it comes now to player who doesn't really see the court, I just want to make sure that I'm there for him. I want to support him in either way. Yeah. What I also do after weight sessions, I write down, not everything, of course, but I write down what players, for example, in what particular lift, how much weight they used, how many reps, so that I can approach them about this, and hopefully can give them a positive feedback. Hey, look where you were in the beginning. Now you're here. It's perfect. You're making progress. I mean, just keep on doing it. Stay ready, because once your number is called, you want to be in a situation that you can show the coach that you can do it. Yeah. In the end, there are not that many things. I mean, of course, what I said earlier, that like what I said about buy-in and stuff, that I just make myself available to them and support them in either direction. Wherever they need support, I just want them to know that I'm there. Yeah.
Right.
But it's obviously a tough situation.
But your goal would be to have them motivated through things that you do with them and to kind of keep it up by helping them see that they are making progress and that they are having good development in other parts?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good thing. For example, you know, there are all these lifestyle factors, lifestyle things like sleep, nutrition, hydration, recovery. These are also always a very good topic to talk about the guys, because there is so much more they can get better at, than just basketball. But if they get better at these other things, there might be a transfer to the court. So this is also always something I can talk to these particular players about, just to paint the bigger picture for them. Yeah. Maybe they're already good in these things. Maybe they have a consistent sleep routine. Maybe they eat well, but there's always things you can improve. I always like to say, you know, players in the practice gym, I don't know, on a day where we like practice three times, like with team practice, weights and shooting, a player might be in the practice gym for 5 hours, maybe six, on a day where we practice once, they're in there for 2-3 hours. I mean, a day has 24 hours. So there are a lot of things players can do that hopefully makes their game, but there are a lot of choices, especially when it comes to food choices, sleep, hydration, all these kind of things. And I'm as far as saying that these hours away from the practice gym I think they're more important. I like to say, if you only sleep 6 hours, 5 hours, the best training in the weight room won't probably give you anything, because the most important thing you're not getting is sleep, for example. So this is also something I can talk to them about, for example.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And I think if you carry that across to them the right way, you can, again, you know, get them to buy into what you're doing and help themselves in the end. Because there is so much time in the day that, you know, athletes have. That they can use for their own good eventually.
Exactly.
And obviously, I could talk about player performance all day and what things to improve, and I know you could too. You've already come a long way. Where do you want to be in 10 years? What's your personal goal? Like, where do you want to go? Where do you see yourself headed? Or where would you like to see things go?
I mean, I think... I think success is something that you do, is something, no, I have to say that differently. I don't have a goal right now. I just really love what I'm doing, and I just try to be as good as possible, as helpful as possible. I just try to, learn as much as possible. And this is something, for example, where I now have where I have more time too, since I'm not team manager anymore. Mm-hmm. I can read, for example, more. I can read more studies. I can do other things that where I didn't have that much time to compared to my work in Göttingen, for example. I'm trying to build something with our youth performance coach. We're trying to build something for Bamberg. We're just trying to digitalize everything so that we can help players with an app, for example, that I don't have to put everything in an Excel sheet anymore, that I can that I can show players videos, for example, if our coach signs a player in the summer and it's still 6 weeks up until we start with the preseason. I can send him something where he can see things, not just, because if I send him an Excel sheet, he probably doesn't have a clue what I'm talking about. That is a lot of, I mean, in order to do something like that, we just have to invest a lot of time, and that's something I'm just always trying to get better in every regard, in every year. About my knowledge, if it's about the team and organization, if it's for the weight room, can we add something? Can we make something more efficient, for example? And right now, I just I just love my work. I wake up and I'm happy to go to work because that's something that I do something that I really love. And to be honest, I don't really feel like, I don't really feel like I'm working, yeah, because it's my hobby. It's amazing. So I don't have a true goal, to be honest. I just want to do as best. I want to do the best as I can. And whatever happens, happens. Now I'm in Bamberg. If you asked me 3 years ago that I'm going to be the coach in Bamberg, I would have told you, oh, no way this is going to happen. And I'm really thankful for it. I'm just trying to enjoy it to the best I can. And I'll just try everything to get better myself and to help the guys wherever help is needed.
I love the process-driven approach, and it's worked for you so far. So it's great to hear your passion about it, and wishing you all the best driving this forward and continuing on that path, because that can lead to great things. In addition to being an athletic trainer, performance coach, you also started a little side project not too long ago, and it's been looks like it's been fun for you. Can you give people a little background on what else you're doing besides being an athletic trainer?
Yeah, a good friend of mine, Leonard Stechmann, he asked me if I would like to make a podcast with him. And in the beginning, I was like, I'm not sure if I'm in a position to tell people something. And I wasn't really sure about that. But then in the end, I was like, hey, let's go. Let's try. I mean, the worst thing that can happen, nobody's listening to it. And a good coach once said, every exposure is good exposure. And we just started doing it. And we had like a few interesting guests. You were also a guest, Garrett. Yeah. That was very interesting. And I can only say it's a ton of fun. It's a lot of things you learn. Just, of course, you prepare for these kind of conversations. And although you're prepared, you never really know what's coming. So you have to decide on the fly. And right. It's a great thing. And we get okay feedback. People like listening to it. Of course, it's a little bit, it's a lot about basketball, but not just basketball. Yeah? And it's, of course, a lot about training. And Leonard, he has his psychological background. He relates things then to basketball, of course, and how players deal with certain situations and stuff. I'm always interested in the training topics, of course. And that's basically so the gist of it. And it's a lot of fun. I learn a lot, or we learn a lot. We have a lot of fun together. And we keep it up as long as it's fun for us.
Well, you guys do a great job. You guys have a really nice mix of different people that you're interviewing, and it's definitely a good way to tell more, you know, and share with people about the different aspects around sports, but performance, just everything you already mentioned. So you guys do a good job. Where can people find it?
Basically everywhere you find podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, basically everywhere, just Brain Pops, and there you go.
Brain Pops, that's the one that you got to search for next to Inside the Game by Scorers First. Those are the two podcasts
exactly
you have on your heavy rotation. And Dominic, I want to thank you for your time. This was fun, and maybe we can revisit at some point in the future, talk more and learn more and be more of a resource for players and people around the game of basketball. But thank you for your time.
Thank you, Garrett. I really appreciate it that you asked me for being a guest on your show. That was a nice experience.
All right. It was good. It was good. Thank you, Dom. Have a great night.
And you. Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Dominic Teodoro for his time today, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Inside the Game podcast by Scorers for Sport Management. As you notice, we've been gone for a while. Obviously, it's my goal to bring this back more frequently. Hoping to bring good people on that you guys can take something from, and if you have any ideas, people that you would like to hear from, or any topics that you would like to have covered, please don't hesitate to reach out. We would love to hear from you, and enjoy the holidays, and thanks again for your time as well.